Hugh's talk last night was a reminder of the world that's out there and an inquiry into how you can cultivate a sense of peace as you move out into the world. I wanted to say a few words about that process and some practicalities about this transition that lies ahead. You may be familiar with the following lines that say, if there is to be peace in the world, there must be peace in the nations. If there is to be peace in the nations, there must be peace in the cities. If there is to be peace in the cities, there must be peace between neighbors. If there is to be peace between neighbors, there must be peace in the home. If there is to be peace in the home, there must be peace in the heart. So how do we stop the war? How do we stop turmoil? The only place where we can start is inside. And from there are the expanding circles to which we can affect the world around us. One of the byproducts of meditation is sensitivity. You become more sensitive to what's happening inside of you, and at the same time, inevitably, you become more sensitive to those around you. And you become more sensitive to these worldly winds, to the winds of aversion and greed and grasping and restlessness and doubt and agitation. And oftentimes I find at the end of retreat that I underestimate how sensitive I become. There's a tenderness that is cultivated here as we've removed so much of the external stimulation. And it requires a certain degree of nurturing and even a certain degree of protection to keep this sense of open presence, alive and thriving. And you may have noticed this when you look in the mirror. Maybe there's a little softening around the eyes or a little softening in the face. And when you go home, when you talk to those who know you well, they will sense it. They will sense a quality in your voice that has come from such deep relaxation. Inevitably, they'll see some light in your eyes they hadn't seen before. And some of them will ask you, what did you do? What happened? My advice? Don't tell them. Or if you do tell them, be particularly aware of the point at which their eyes start glazing over. Where I lived in the ashram, at the end of a long retreat, someone came up to talk to the guru, and she said, my heart is so full, I want to race home and tell my parents I love them. And he paused, and he said, don't do that. He said, just paint the basement. It's important to take good care in this transition. A helpful analogy that I've found is that it's as if you've been putting money into your checking account. There's more vitality, just energetically there's more vitality. You're more rested. There's more mental clarity. Your sense of intuition may be heightened by the slowing down and pausing. Your emotional equilibrium may be a lot more stable. And the question becomes, how do you spend that energy that you've accumulated? And really, how do you reinvest it? And there are classical teachings on this. For those who are not living permanently in a monastery, but are householders, you'll find that the world hasn't slowed down. And in fact, there's probably a backlog of busy people wanting your attention. And just to be mindful as you engage back into activity, if you can slow it down, not to do all your email at once. Every great tradition talks about a daily practice, of how important a daily practice is. And we all know it's critical, and we all know that when you engage into any spiritual tradition, any spiritual inquiry, there's something that comes right with it, and it's called meditator's guilt. A sense that you're not meditating frequently enough, you're not meditating long enough, not meditating deep enough. And I find it's really important to get a handle on that. Otherwise, this practice, which is meant to free our heart and mind, actually becomes a way that we can beat ourselves up, a way that feeds right into doubt and that ruthless inner critic. So it's helpful to find a realistic time of day that works for you, and to find a practice that works for you. If you're living a very stressful life with a lot going on, you may find just sitting and watching the breath is too subtle. You might find a more embodied practice to be more helpful, more of a concentration practice to help you gather your attention back again. Daily practice has always been a challenge for me. One of my deepest confessions is that I hate yoga. Every morning a thought appears, I should do some yoga, which is followed instantly by the thought, I hate yoga. The times when I can fire it up and actually do it, what I notice is between 3 and 7 minutes, I have a second thought, which is, I love yoga. I should do this more. And maybe you've had that experience of resisting your practice, somehow managing to kickstart yourself into it, and at some point thinking, why don't I do this more often? Why don't I do this all the time? I've spent a lot of time working this angle for myself, and what I've come up with is 7 minutes of yoga I can commit to on a daily basis. 8 feels too much, but 7? And what I find is, with that commitment of 7 minutes, sometimes that 7 minutes inspires me to do 10 or 15 or more. But if I do the minimum, I feel okay. I've kind of have that inner commitment. Oftentimes I lead a retreat really inspired, and I think an hour a day, I'm going to sit for an hour a day from now on. I do it the first day, the second day I don't. The third day I'm already 2 hours behind. And we give up. So it's a very deep inquiry to really determine what can you commit to on a daily basis, even if it's just assuming the position, even if it's just pausing for a moment, sitting at the edge of your bed and feeling the breath. In addition to having a daily practice, many traditions talk about the power of retreat, the power of stepping away from your habits, the rituals. Just as you've done for this intensive retreat, these 5 days. Inevitably, what happens is that you will find your daily practice will be deeply informed by this retreat. There will be some clarity, some distinctions, some insights that may come as a result of all the effort that you've put in for these 5 days. And inevitably, you may find that the richness of your daily practice will begin to fade over time, as the busyness of your life begins to encroach on the space that you've created. And to steal a line from Pat, which I found very helpful, when you leave a retreat, consider having the next retreat on the calendar. And that is not a marketing ploy. What I find is when I have a retreat that I know is out there, somehow it enlivens my daily practice. Just knowing I have that time out there. No matter how much you might get caught into the swamp of busyness and anxiety, when you know somewhere in your awareness there is this space, this sanctuary out there, it makes a huge difference. A huge difference. Whether that retreat be a long retreat like this, or a day-long, or a weekend retreat, they are invaluable. They're priceless. The third element that's very helpful is the power of Sangha, the power of community. I read about a study that said if you take your five closest friends, you add up their income and divide it by five, it's probably your income. When I first heard that, I thought, well, the moral of that story is I need to find wealthier friends. But it's an indicator of who you spend time with. You tend to gravitate toward those that you spend the most time with. We are influenced by each other on very, very deep levels. So to consider how you can cultivate community, how you can cultivate Kalyanamitta, spiritual friends. The impact here, again, is it's immeasurable. It's priceless. This can be done by attending classes, by going to Dharma talks. IMCW has Kalyanamitta groups, which are the spiritual friends groups where you get together to sit and to really to share and to be informed by each other of how you're applying the Dharma in your life. Tremendously powerful. And Hugh was speaking last night of the power of service. The word seva, S-E-V-A, means selfless service. It's the path and the practice of losing ourselves in the serving of others. It's a powerful path, a wonderful way to drop that sense of I and mine and that natural kind of inborn tightness of protection, and to give, as Pat said, to practice that letting go of time, that letting go of resources, and to feel how your awareness expands when you answer that question, how can I help? What is the way that you can give and serve that excites you, that enlivens you? And again, if you're interested in some of the dharmic expressions of service, we have this incredible program of Insight on the Inside, of taking the Dharma to those who are incarcerated. IMCW has some wonderful activities and explorations of diversity, which is a real passion for us, to make this available to those who don't find it so accessible in their communities. There's the Buddhist Peace Fellowship, which is a wonderful collection of people supporting the Inward Bound meditation education, taking this to younger folks. We have a wonderful mentoring program through IMCW for those who have some time on the cushion to make yourself available for people who are really wanting to know more about this. A wonderful way to serve. And simply to really explore for yourself, as Pat said, how can you go beyond to call that friend in need, to visit someone who's sick, to take on this inquiry of service as part of your path, part of your expression. And of course, it sets up a very interesting question of how do we find balance? How do we find that place of stability inside, where the worldly winds don't throw us off so much? And how do we give at the same time? One of my favorite quotes is from E.B. White, where he says, "I wake up each morning torn between a desire to serve the world and to savor it. This makes it difficult to plan the day." And there's something very powerful in that question of how do you savor and how do you serve? How do you find this balance where you feel centered inside? And how can you serve and bring your presence into the world from a sense of overflowing, a true sense of giving, not from lack, but from a sense of overflow? I wish you well on your journey. It's been such a pleasure to be with you. Namaste.